Hi, everybody. Welcome to Yeah, But Still. Today with us, a guest that we've wanted to have on for a very long time, and finally have him. We have Keith Buckley of Every Time I Die. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me today. I appreciate it. I wanted to do this for a while, too. I don't know why it wasn't sooner, but...
I know. Well, we wanted to do it in person, and you're a busy man, but now it's just, like, that's completely ruled out.
Now I'm just trapped in my house.
I know. Yeah. Same
picking
here.
Beans today. That's what I was doing. Picking beans.
Well, you got some beans in the mix?
I got some beans. My daughter picked them out in the garden, and she handed it to me right before I started this, but she, like, didn't give me anything to dip it in, so I'm not going to... What the fuck am I going to do with a raw bean?
Raw beans.
Did you tell her that?
No, I didn't. I would have saved it until she's about to go to sleep. Just want to let you know I'm really disappointed in no dips today.
Yeah, wake her up.
You know, I just shaking your mind. Like, something's been on my mind. You didn't get to ranch with this bean today, and I'm still upset about it.
Yeah,
she's got to learn.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really excited to have you because, I mean, dude, I'll have to set the stage. When I was I was listening to your band when I was not a young lad, but like entering, kind of like becoming, you know, a teen, I guess, like probably 13 into high school.
And we're like,
yeah, I mean, and then into high school, like enough where we were like discovering music kind of, and fully me and my group of friends were like fully nerding out on you guys. Like we had some like video that must have come with like a CD of like you guys all hanging out in your backyard. And we were like,
oh, yeah.
We used to watch that multiple times and be like, dude, these guys are the coolest people I've ever seen. Like, they have sex.
Weird. That's so weird to me. Like, I can't imagine.
You told me about this, Zach, that you guys would just watch them drink beers.
It's literally
awesome.
It was like, I don't remember the content. It was like literally you guys in like a backyard, which now I realize is a normal house that had like a small pool, I think. And we were like, damn, Every Time I Die has a mansion.
So that was our manager at the time, Paul Conroy's house, and we were just in, he lives outside of Philadelphia, so we were just like in town, and they're like, well, we have a day off, so maybe we should try to film some like bonus content or something. So our friend had a video camera, and literally everything is just on the spot. There's no script, there's no plan whatsoever. We were just kind of cruising around his house, and Andy, the guitar player, was sort of leading the tour, but it turned out pretty good, I think. I mean, we were just being fucking idiots, and some of it's regretful, but it's just strange to me that like that people like that I'm friends with, like you, had like knew of me before we were friends.
It's weird for me now too, because I mean, we're not that different in age. It's not a big age difference, but then when you're like 13, 1 year is a big age difference.
We
are probably like 14 or 15 when that happened, but young enough where like seeing any person over the age of 18 like hanging out and drinking a beer, we're like, dude, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen in my fucking life.
Still at it.
Yeah, but
look at you now. You know,
Here I am, baby. Drink beer
on Zoom.
Yeah, you're.
I got beans growing. I don't even have to pay for them. I got one cold beer.
I should. So. It'd be funny if I like automatically snapped back, like regressed back to that teenage. And I'm like, dude, you look so cool right now drinking the beer, bro. Bro, you look so tight. It was like that was a really funny era to look back on, it was the boom of emo music, that era of emo, I guess, and like, I mean, what would you even call like the MySpace era? What would you call that?
MySpace definitely ushered in a whole new kind of music, and honestly, at the time, it was mostly referred to as fashioncore.
Yeah,
which is just like one of the worst things you could ever ascribe.
Yeah,
to
that
music.
Sucks.
Yeah, because it was all like it sort of like harkened back to the glam bands. Like everyone was now trying to be like really pretty and like really flashy and really flamboyant, while still writing heavy music. And for me personally, the band that I saw do that first was 18 Visions, which is from Orange County, California.
Yeah.
So like, I remember seeing that and just being like, this is totally different than the tough guy hardcore that I've been listening to. So I actually really loved it. But then all these other bands just kind of, you know, grew out of that and tried to mimic what they were doing, in my opinion. And it turned into just like this out of like this avalanche of egos in different bands, because now they were like using hair straighteners and wearing makeup, and the fashion was front and center, and you know, the music was sort of secondary, which sucked as a fan of music.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's probably why me and my friends all really were drawn to your band at that time, because it was like, it was also the tight pants era where like basically like skinny jeans weren't out yet, but everybody we had all been wearing like JNCOs, and it was this in between time where like tight pants were kind of becoming cool, but people were buying girl, like women's full on, like a range of girls' jeans. Like you just you'd buy women's jeans, but like there, I mean, obviously it's the most ridiculous extent. But you guys like, we just thought you looked cool without being like absurd about it, essentially.
Well, yeah, I think MySpace, that was kind of the thing that I felt most comfortable about my, I felt most comfortable with about my band, was that like the guys that were in it, that we were in it together, and we just didn't take ourselves too seriously, but not to the point where we were trying to like satirize anything. We were just being, you know, exactly who we were, you know? So, and I think that that's really what kind of gave us the longevity of it, is that we really weren't sort of picking up on any of those trends or anything. We're just, let's fucking make music and hang out.
And your stuff like holds up too. And like pretty much nothing from that era holds up whatsoever, in my opinion. Like there's like very few bands that were big back then that like actually hold up, because they usually were on some kind of gimmick that is very weird now.
That's what I was, exactly. And I think what a lot of bands don't realize is that, you know, honesty has that stamina and has that longevity, but people don't realize that when they're young. And honestly, we didn't either. It's not like we had a game plan of like, well, in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, we're still going to like what we're doing now because we prefer to be honest about it. We didn't think about that, but all these bands that started like catering to the trends and things, I really feel like they got taken off course by the flashiness of it. And they probably would have had longer careers, and they probably would have written more timeless music had they just stuck with who they knew they were. Because I mean, I saw bands like just get fucking eaten up by like even major labels. Like that band Cave-In was enormously influential band. And then they got signed to a major, and they toured with Foo Fighters, and then the label dropped them. Like, and then, you know, that sucks because they're fucking incredible, but it's sort of like they tried to get steered away from it in order to get a broader fan base, which is totally understandable, but it just wasn't a match for them. But well, luckily they're back.
That's still something that labels do, right? Is just like sign people and then just immediately kill their career.
Absolutely. Yeah, for absolutely. Sure. You can't really step into that whole, I mean, it's a landmine. Like you can't, or minefield, like you can't go even anywhere near a major label, because you have to tread so lightly, and still while treading lightly, still be, aggressive enough to make an impact, which is a very, you know, it's a razor thin line to walk. So I don't know of any band really that's done it well. Maybe Fall Out Boy.
Gone major.
Yeah, gone major and like still been able to like write good songs and like be true to who they were, you know?
Yeah, I guess, but they're also like, they don't sound anything. They may as well be a different band now, you know, which is just like, which is good. I mean, get the bag.
I mean, Fall Out Boy's still got it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Panic at the Disco. That's a situation where it's like, what is this?
Well, Fall Out Boy too, I think, is the same. But also, Fall Out Boy is from where I grew up. I remember, I remember that band, like they were a band long, long, long before they blew up. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. They like put in actual work. Yeah. Like they weren't just like this media baby. Like they really put in the fucking work, and you know, their stuff is still good. And they keep, honestly, like that band went away for about maybe 8 years or something. Like, can you think of another band in history that went from being like top of the charts, fucking pop band, taking 8 years off and then coming back and just resuming their place at number one? Like,
yeah, that's pretty wild.
They had figured out how to come back and meet it, you know, in stride, which is awesome.
Brandon, this is definitely you were not listening to the same music, but I assure you, me and Keith have some topics that'll pique your interest. very soon. Yeah, we want to talk about the freaks, the freaks of that era and Warped Tour.
Yeah,
rest assured, perfect, Brandon. Yeah. You know, a topic true to your heart. You know, near and dear to the
I'm
podcast
listening.
As well. Yeah. Well, we'll get. I mean, well, that's the thing with that. That era came all. With that era came all sorts of freaks. And there were so many. And I've recently had my memory jogged for a few reasons. You know, I'm bored during COVID, so I'm like remembering bands and like going back and listening to stuff just to see like, oh, what did they even sound like? I remember that band. And then that one photographer, Jerry Guzman, I think is his name, has been posting like this huge archive of kind of like, you know, 2000 to 2010 era like shows. And you know, the most striking thing about seeing those pictures to me is that in the music scene, like the music scene back then, like everything was like all kind of together. Like no matter what you listen to, it could be like completely different. You're all kind of like lumped into this like MySpace scene, and there's hierarchies of like somebody's the biggest loser, somebody's super super cool, somebody's in the middle, like very extreme. And then you look back and it's like, oh, everybody looked ridiculous. Like nobody was cool actually. So it's kind of like I wish I knew that, because it's like you may as I may as well have just done whatever I wanted and never worried for one second, because everybody's gonna look dumb in 8 years. It's like
exactly. And actually the only people that don't, well, not that they don't look dumb, but they look the least dumb are the people that were just doing what they wanted. You know, those are the people that have had this like sort of timeless, like perpetual sort of just good vibe. You know what I mean? And it was because they weren't really trying to look for a place to fit in, which is very strange, because the hardcore scene and the punk scene is where people go specifically to fit in. You know, I mean, that's at least like why I got into it, is because I just didn't really, you know, I didn't really meld with anybody else in high school or any other groups, or, you know, until I found like skateboarding, and then it was, the music came after that. So, you know, you get into this realm and you stick out by almost not sticking out at all, which I feel like was probably the best. I wish I would have gone that way, because I got into some really bad trends. But
did you? Would you say you did?
Bell-bottom jeans. I had boot-cut jeans, all right? I had fucking boot-cut jeans. And that's one of the most embarrassing things in my life.
You know, but everybody did
a little better,
bit.
Yeah, that's better than, like, the jeans that were, like, snug, tight.
Yeah, well, I feel like I can validate it to myself in just saying that, like, I was getting out of the JNCO jean stage and moving toward the skinny jean stage, but I started at the thighs and like went down. So like my thighs are tight, but they flared out. So I still had a little bit of both.
I mean, the theme of everything was that like you just really couldn't get what you wanted, and it was just barely starting where you could get it. Like music, I mean, you just were able to start downloading like Kazaa songs. Like before, if you wanted to listen to like any of the bands that I listened to in high school, I couldn't go and buy their CD at a local store. Like, I would need to go like into the city and maybe they would have it if I was lucky. But yeah, I mean, MySpace and like the early music streaming, I guess, like, or I don't even, what was it? Like what do you download from a website?
Yeah, LimeWire and like Napster and stuff. Like, you just download it. Yeah. I don't even know if I remember streaming it.
And so like that, like CDs and like brick and mortar music stores couldn't keep up with trends, but the internet could. And then same with like clothes. Like if you saw something cool that you liked, or if you wanted to wear like, I mean, it sounds really lame saying this, but like if you wanted to wear like tighter pants or something, like you couldn't just like go buy those. Like you had to really now
you have to find the right fit finally, instead of just buying a size 43 waist when you're 15 years old. You know, you have to actually go get a nice fit.
It was hard.
One of the stranger things to me was that like when I was growing up with hardcore, everything was like big, and it was I think looking back on it, because like you're a teenager and you know you're living with your parents and you're in the suburbs, but you don't feel seen and you don't feel noticed. And, you know, so you wear big things and it's all these enormous shirts. It's the enormous pants, these enormous piercings, you know, you get tattoos that are big and seeable. And it's just sort of like to stake your claim, you know, in like the consciousness of whoever, like even if you look ridiculous, at least people are looking at you because you feel like you're living a very mundane sort of life. So I get that showiness to it. And I think that that's really why it happened. But yeah, then it just went the other way, the other side of the spectrum completely. Like now, instead of everything being enormous, everything's going to be super small and tight. And, you know, even if your body's not made for it.
Yeah. And like the side effects of just not like fashion now, if something gets big on Instagram, like there's drop shipping companies in China that are like selling it the next day. Yeah. Like you could get whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like
it's very easy to get what you want. And I also remember, like you said, I also had to go downtown to like get up to a record store that would have anything that might have interested me. But I also just used to take my allowance and go buy tapes based on the cover art. You know, I hadn't even heard of these fucking bands. So that's how I found Dinosaur Jr., Gorilla Biscuits, Sense Feels, like Iceburn. I remember just buying just because of I like the cover art. But then you're stuck with those fucking records for God knows how long until you can save up to buy more records. So you listen to them because you had to make yourself like them. Like, this is all the music I have right now. I don't want to listen to the radio. I bought these CDs with my money. I have no money left. I'm going to fucking learn how to like this music. So even if you didn't like it, it became so imprinted on your psyche that you just like, it's still there for me too. These bands I didn't even like, I still don't know the words to their songs, but it's a different thing because now with the internet, you just, if you don't like it, you move on and you don't learn to like it ever. You don't really give it a fair shake. So, kind of sucks.
Yeah. So the other, this is a weird pivot, but yeah, the other thing, I mean, it was weird to me. I wanted to talk about the creeps and the freaks.
Yeah, let's talk about the freaks.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know, I see Brandon sitting over there.
Are we moving on from jeans talk?
We're moving on from
jeans.
We
can get off the denim riffing if you want.
You know, because
I mean, I could talk about jeans all day.
I know you could. Yeah.
No, like literally, I've got some jeans insights.
Are you a denim? Are you like a denim, like a raw denim guy?
Well, I don't know. I just have like, I wear like two pairs of like dad jeans, basically. Yeah. Like, you know, but I was wearing jeans that were too tight for a little too long.
Yeah,
I would say. But I just remembered a specific traumatic open mic experience from early on where I did this show when I was like 17 or 18, where I was the only white comic.
Yeah,
I was the only white comic. And I went up, I was wearing my tight jeans and I had like an okay set or whatever. But then this comic comes up, his name's Jason Weems, very funny guy, but he goes up and then he's like, man, you see Brandon's jeans? I could see the content of all that shit. I could see everything happening in those jeans. And everybody was laughing. Everybody was laughing at me. And he spent his whole set talking about how tight my jeans were.
Dude,
and
that
really
is fucking
stuck with
dramatic.
Me. Yeah, I was in high school.
I'm surprised you stuck with the jeans, dude, and didn't switch over to the JNCOs.
Yeah. I should have right to JNCOs.
I really should have stopped right then and there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going into sweatpants here today.
But so right. There's no streets, avoiding. Yeah. There's no avoiding this topic. I mean, so part of that era for me, we were talking about like going into the city to get stuff. I mean, same with shows too. I mean, like for me, it was like sneaking downtown or like kind of getting loose permission to go with like older friends, and we would go to like in Chicago we go to like Fireside Bowl or like Bottom Lounge. Yeah. I've definitely seen you play there, but I mean the first ones I was going to, we were all pretty young, and I remember like I would remember like bands that would come out and like talk to like the girls we were talking to, and I would get like jealous, but also kind of think it'd be cool because I would like get to talk to the bands, but they weren't interested in talking to me. And then, well, I don't want to name the band, but we'll probably talk about this band later without naming them their name specifically. But a certain screamo type band with very high vocals. Somebody from the band, I remember like fully dating this girl that I was good friends with. And me and, like, whenever they would come to town, like, I mean, she said it was her boyfriend. We were, like, 16 at the time. Yeah. And, like, but we had a big problem with it.
Yeah.
But not for the right reasons. We were just like, bro, yo, you're hogging all the good kids, man. Like, because I was also a kid.
We were just mad that he wasn't dating you.
Well, we were mad that he was taking all the 16-year-old girls from us. Because we're also, us as 16-year-olds, we're just like, bro, like, we can't compete with this, you know?
Right.
And just, like, we're mad on that level. And, like, when he would come and hang out, I would refuse to go, like, hang with our crew.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I didn't really, like, the age thing was, like, so far in the background. I didn't even, like, it didn't even click with me. But now, you know, as soon as you become an adult, you're like, what the fuck was that guy doing? Like, driving deep into the suburbs. Like, he's driving, like, 35 minutes away. Like, his band played a show. He's going to the suburbs to hang out with a high school girl.
Like, yeah, it's fucking insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely don't realize it when you're that young, but, like, when you finally become an adult, and especially when you have a kid. Like, I have a daughter now, and she's 4, and I'm like, you know, the idea that at 15 she's going to be, if she would ever date someone in a band, that just, it makes me, like, sick to my fucking stomach. I mean, it's so, there's just such a disparity, even just on, like, a maturity level. Like, what the fuck would an adult, like, what grounds do they meet on other than, this guy just feels like his ego is being constantly stroked, you know, that has to be all there is to it. That's probably a result of becoming so big on MySpace so fast, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is really, you know, that was probably the first time that anyone ever felt any sort of, like, internet celebrity or internet fame. And what the fuck do you do? What do you do with internet fame now? Because I still wouldn't know how to ever deal with it. But what do you do back then when the internet is brand new and all of a sudden you have, like, hundreds of thousands of plays on your song and people know the words to your lyrics that you've never even played a show where they live anymore? You know, I mean, I think it just becomes like you think you're a fucking god all of a sudden. So, And this is in no way excusing it, but it was rampant back then because of that.
Yeah. And I mean, you were touring for a long time with all sorts of a wide array of weirdos.
You do is just not fuck a 15-year-old.
Yeah. I mean, it's so fucking, right? It's so easy to not fuck with kids. It's so easy. Just hang out with your homies and fucking, you know, play dice or something. There's no reason that you need to be fucking the kids. It's crazy, but at the same time, if you are touring like that and you realize that your fan base is younger, then, I mean, things like Warped Tour are just a fucking, I mean, it's like a...
Oh, brother, I mean, we've talked about this. It's called Warped Tour for a reason.
We've talked about this at length. I've said that it's called Warped Tour because of the warped behavior that you see. And it's not even sponsored by Vans. It's called Vans Warped Tour because, you know,
get in the van.
They got some warped Vans.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, Warped
Tour. I think there was a year that it was actually sponsored by what were those really sour candies?
Warheads.
Warheads?
Warheads? Yeah.
Yeah, it was sponsored by Warheads and Aphibophilia.
That's so funny. I mean, yeah, it's weird to think back to that shit. I'm also just laughing at, like, the absurdity of me and my 16-year-old friends, like, getting just, like, literally not even thinking about the predatory aspect, just being like, bro, save some of the good teenage girls for us, dude.
Yeah, but you know that it has to, like, cross those like, perverts' minds that, like, not only are they having their ego gratified by, like, the female underage fans, but, like, that they're making the guys jealous of all of them. You know what I mean? Like, that's such a fucking twist.
And I would probably,
but, like, boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's the funny thing, because I would feel a little I mean, I'd feel bad talking about this if the situation was, if I knew it was a real bad one. I think luckily, I mean, it was bad, but there, my group of friends back then was like, there was like three girls and like 40 boys in a crew, you know? So I don't think, like, this guy's definitely predatory, but I think the reality of all those hangs would be that he would like come and just get cock blocked by like 30 16-year-old boys, which makes it even more ridiculous. It's just like, dude, what do you do? Why are you doing that to yourself? Like, why are you going to hang with these boys?
So he would not only just like come to hang out with the girl, but he would come to like hang out with all the friends too. Like, I just picture just like he imagines that he's going to show up and everyone's just going to be like seated around him and he's just going to be, you know, exalted. But like, why would that be any, how is that fulfilling for fucking anybody? It's just so, I don't know. It's really disgusting. But I think that that's what happens when you all of us, when you're a narcissist to begin with, and then you get this instant fame because of Napster or
yeah. I think we were like 16 or 17. I knew we could drive. So it was like,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like we were like 12, but I mean, all sorts of fucking freaks, dude. I think, you know who I'm talking about, but
Yeah. Speaking of which I said we want to bring up today. So the Juggalos and ICP.
Yes.
They declared Davey Vanity of Blood on the Dance Floor to be their number one most wanted public enemy number one for the Juggalos. And I think, hold on. Whoa. Have you seen this?
This is not the guy I was talking about.
You seen this?
But similar thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I didn't personally witness anything because we were on the Warped Tour with that. I mean, the 2012 Warped Tour lineup is just a fucking Mount Olympus of perverts. Like, fucking, you have like Blood on the Dance Floor was there, and then Lost Prophets, which is one of the most disgusting stories I've ever heard of anybody from a band. But I just didn't. These people were not on my radar at all, because you know, you kind of know what they're there for, and it's just disgusting. But you know, then you feel bad. It's like, it's not that anyone was silent about it. I just never went around them. I never saw anything, and it wasn't that I chose to not talk about it. I literally never saw anything because they creeped me out even from across a parking lot. I just wanted nothing to do with them. And then lo and behold, they're, you know, smoking meth and having sex with kids.
No, absolutely. I don't think anybody would incriminate you for not knowing about the behavior of Blood on the Dance Floor.
Yeah. I wasn't keeping track.
But dude, I'm sure touring back then was just like crazy. I mean, with like these, yeah, it's just like all sorts of like, you could get getting famous on MySpace, like, or any of those platforms back in the day. You had to be even like, there is a chance of just being like normal and good, but there's also like just completely deranged freaks that blew up back.
Oh yeah, totally. So what's
going on with Blood on the Dance Floor?
Oh.
Here, hold on. Let me find the tweet. So Insane Clown Posse urged Juggalos to inflict beatdown on Blood on the Dance Floor's Davey Vanity.
Whoa.
They say that, hold on, let me see if Violent J took to the band's Instagram to call it Vanity, dubbing him a free roaming unconvicted fucking pedophile. Reported accusation of sexual assault and rape by at least 21 women. Many of the women were underage at the time of their alleged assault, with at least one as young as 14.
Jesus.
Whoa. Even Chris Hansen, the former host of To Catch a Predator, launched an investigation into Vanity.
No way.
Whoa.
Well, yeah, Chris Hansen's like, he's not on TV anymore, but he's doing his own investigations online, like a YouTube show. But he's like investigating YouTubers and like random seamsters now, which kicks ass. I mean,
he's going to end up being QAnon pretty soon at that rate.
No, I mean, like showing up to a Blood on the Dance Floor show.
I didn't know what this guy fucking looked like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, zero surprises.
Ew, fuck.
Zero surprises. Yeah.
Well, so here's the thing, though, too, is that I honestly just thought that he was like sexually ambiguous, like amorphous sort of thing. Like he didn't really on it. Like he just cared more about like the theatrics of performing, and that's what the band was about. I'm like, okay, well that's fucking Alice. Like Alice Cooper does that. You know, there's so many. Kiss does that. It's just a makeup and it's a character, and it really has nothing to do with who they are as a person. But like the fact that like he was trying to entice younger girls now in retrospect is just. I don't know, man. It's something that like it's almost too unbelievable to entertain the idea at first because it's so obvious that you're like, there's no way that he's trying to look this way to get you know girls to like him because I just don't think he's interested in having
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
With anyone.
Yeah.
Like he's just a character.
Yeah.
But then it's
That's crazy. I know. Sorry, we're talking about only this shit, but it is great. I mean, what's crazy to me is that like your band got lumped in with like these really fucking absurd caricature novelty bands, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
The Warped Tour in general is just like, huh? Like what are they doing together? And some of the tours that you were probably forced on or whatever. Like, I mean, were you ever on weird tours?
Yeah, well, we did Ozfest, which might sound now like a more perfect fit, but it was actually probably the worst tour we've ever done. Like, we couldn't have been more unaccepted by the Ozfest crowd. Like, I wore like a fucking, I don't know, just like some ironic 80s band t-shirt, and like I was getting spit on. Like, it's just like everyone there is a very diehard metalhead, and if you don't have the look and you don't have the sound and you don't have the solos or anything, then they were very unwelcoming. But shows were starting at like nine. Like the first time a band would play in the morning was 9:30 in the morning.
That's crazy.
You're having bands play.
Oh,
and people were already fucking wasted at that point. So that if you end up going on at fucking 6 p.m., it's just a crowd of deranged maniacs, just, you know, drunk and high as fuck, who, you know, enjoy heckling. So,
I mean, nobody should be drinking like a Dunkin' Donuts at Ozfest. Like, that's way too early. Like,
dude, oh no, if they needed you early, you know, they'd bring you Jägermeister.
Oh,
so,
man.
That was cool. Yeah. That was how you woke up. That was how you woke up to play a 9:30 set at Ozfest. But yeah, we've done strange tours like that don't seem like they would work. Newfound Glory we toured with. Taking Back Sunday just did in 2017. It was like the best tour we've ever done. So
really,
we do get along with bands that don't fit that you would look at and be like, this isn't going to work. And it absolutely works, which I think is why we were such a mainstay of Warped Tour was because like, It does work when you actually see it in context to like play with all these, you know, different sort of genre bands. But I mean, my experience on Warped Tour was nothing but positive. It was really good to like get in front of kids that probably wouldn't pick up your music because you're a fucking 40-year-old man with a beard and like, you know what I mean? Like they're not looking, we don't have any radio play or any video play on, you know, Vice or MTV at the time, but they come out and they were very open to it. So I think that unfortunately that like willingness, that openness of the crowd is what led to so many fucking perverts being able to just capitalize on it. Like these kids are experiencing something totally new and they don't realize that just by being vulnerable to just new music that they're becoming vulnerable to people with really bad intentions.
You have a story that I told you to, this was a funny one, right? I mean, like you have a story I told you to save for this one, but it's about, this is actually about, and I'm not going to say who this is because it's an old, I don't want to say who it is, but I think it's about the same guy, right? That I was talking about.
Yeah, same guy, oddly enough. So we were playing in 2013 in Australia. It was a tour called Big Day Out, which was just like a dream come true. The promoters like put you up on like rooftop suites. Every band member gets their own fucking room.
That's sick.
Everything's paid for. It's just the perfect tour. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen anymore. And so we were on it with like Band of Horses and like the Chili Peppers and Yeah's and stuff. And it wasn't a huge lineup. So we were like really, really thankful to like be invited. But they would do all these like side shows after the main ones where like bands would sort of play in different clubs around the town in Australia. And one of those we were playing, and we had all kind of emptied out of our dressing room, and we went to like the sort of main hang area where there's like an open bar or whatever. And I remember thinking like, oh, I don't know like when the next time I'll be able to shower, because we had to travel the next day. So I'm going to go take a shower back in the room that we had left. So I go back, and the room's totally empty. Lights are off. I go in the shower, and I'm getting out of the shower, and I hear someone coming in and talking and like kissing. And I'm like, oh Jesus, like this is going to be like really weird. They obviously don't know I'm in here. I kept hearing like kissing. I'm like, if it's one of my band guys, I don't want to like embarrass anybody. You know what I mean? And if it's a guy, I just don't want to make anybody feel weird. So I was just trying to be very, very quiet. And I heard it sounded like there was some sort of argument of like, how far do we go with this moment? And I'm like, oh my God, this is fucking terrible. I'm like cowering in the shower.
Yeah, you're still in the shower like, this whole time.
Yeah, just wait. I just needed an out. And I was like, they're going to fucking find me. This is so, I don't know who, I didn't recognize any of the voices. So I was like, I don't know who, this could fucking be anybone. This could be Anthony Kiedis for all I know. Like, I have no fucking idea who's out there. It is going to be terrible. So I'm like cowering in the corner. And I heard the woman like, I don't know if I should do this. Like I have a boyfriend sort of thing. And the guy was like, he's like, don't you realize who I am? And she's like, yeah, but like, that doesn't really matter. Like, I just don't feel good about this. And then he went on to pretty much recite what you would read on a Wikipedia page of himself. Like all the bands he's been in, how many records he sold.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was disgusting. And I actually started to, I took a voice call of it under the door. So like I had it all on voice.
Oh, do we have the audio?
I don't have it. It was an old phone. But I did play it for his bandmates, who I found out hated him, and they loved it because it was so shamelessly self-promoting. And eventually she's like, yeah, that doesn't really matter to me at all. And then she left, and that was it. And I got to escape without being seen. But yeah, it's the same guy that Jack's talking about. And he is an enormous narcissist, and even in private. So,
And this is not, the funny thing is that like, not even that big of a band, really.
No. Not at all. It's like he had all of his stats almost memorized so that he could sort of rifle them off at any time, which
like
was
the stats like couldn't have even been that cool. It would have been like my band has like 800,000 MySpace friends.
Yes,
you know, like,
exactly. Oh, like yeah, some that, shit like I believe that. The MySpace fans was one of the stats that he was.
No.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Really
like,
gross.
Like
stuff.
I
really gross. Stuff.
Yeah. If I named the name, I'd say probably only like 25% of the people listening would even know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. And that's
we have a pretty niche
too,
audience.
Like
too.
It's not even anything that really sprung from any sort of like profound accomplishment. It was just like this flash in the pan thing that you knew he was capitalizing on, and you knew a lot of these people were trying to capitalize on and just trying to do everything they could to keep that flame going. But luckily that flame died out and we don't have to hear from these people anymore.
Was that like the worst person you met from bands of that era, or were there other like legends?
I think that guy was definitely one of the worst. Because like something that I realized, especially lately with like the conservatives and the GOP being just such advocates of like this grievance culture. And people are like really kind of shocked that so many people are making their identity based around how many grievances they have and how much wrong has been done to them. But I'm like, that's the screamo. Like, that's what emo was. Like, it was just about brandishing some sort of like Purple Heart of how much you had been wronged and wounded. And like, that is really, that's what that always was. So people like the gentleman that we're talking about was one of the louder voices in talking about like how depressed he was all the time and how sad he was. And it was just a ruse to just get people to feel sorry for him. You know?
That's one of the main things that doesn't hold up for a lot of that music, and like music that like only could have worked if you're listening to it in high school, I think.
Yes.
Is like some of it I'll listen and, you know, shit, maybe I didn't really even like at the time, but like we'll go back and revisit. That's just so melodramatic where it's just like, dude, what are you talking about? Like and stuff that just sounds like, you know, beyond like talking about like cutting out like the tongue of a woman who like broke up with them. Like, yeah. And you're supposed to be sad. Like, right. What are you talking about? What? Yeah. Also, you're probably talking about a teenage girl that broke up with you, too. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, the violent imagery, especially of, like, you know, at the time, probably a 16-year-old girl that had wronged you. You know, it's just, it's fucking sick. Like, it's really sick. But I don't really feel like I ever ascribed to that. And
I'm sorry.
I felt like that was really phony when I saw it, so I never fucking knew.
No, yeah, well... I mean, no, this is only relevant because it was a similar era that I knew you had first person contact with.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. And no, and then and that's the thing too, is that like a lot of these people were fucking serious about that shit, which is even worse, is like they were so high on their own farts that like they just believed that they had a right and a platform to sort of take out all this like weird teenage aggression in like violent form with hardcore and punk, which was, you know, it seems violent from the outside, but it's obviously a very loving community. But I think that there was all this misguided anger misguided like self-awareness, and these people just, like I said, they got too far up their own asses, and then they realized that that was what was getting them fans. So they, you know, almost tried to make themselves more depressed and tried to like really make themselves more aggrieved at imaginary people, which is,
I remember,
that's what, now that works for a lot of people.
I remember one of the bands I was in high school, like our singer, when he would get broken up with, he would like write his like songs, and we would like want his girlfriend to dump him again. Be like, dude, we got to get Joe needs to write another song. I hope she dumps him. I mean, literally,
I love
like
the
14,
idea of
15
like seeking out some sort of emotional pain just so you can like finally write like one good lyric.
Yeah. No, yeah. Like paying her to dump him even like. But yeah, I mean, not everybody is free. There's a lot of good bands from that MySpace era and the surrounding that were really good then and are really good now, though. And yours is one of them. So I don't I feel bad like making.
Oh, no.
Talk
I,
about
look,
this, so.
I see us as like we've every time I has just run a through line, you know, in 20 years. And we've definitely seen bands come and go. We've been associated with bands that didn't really make an impact on us. Some of them did. But, you know, it's just been a fucking interesting thing because we've never had the success to do anything that would have taken us out of this realm. You know what I mean? Like, so we've always kind of had like boots on the ground as far as like what's coming up now and like what kids are into. And we've managed to be on the road with some of them. So I really like where we're at, like my perspective on things and like the level of our band. Like, I don't want to be so far removed that like, you know, I don't associate with hardcore bands, obviously, because it's kind of, this is the world I like, but I do manage to not fuck children.
Oh, okay. We're proud of you, man.
Respect.
Yeah, good job. You know, what were your favorites from that era of like bands you toured with and friends with?
As far as like the screamo era,
like
I love
post-hardcore
Thursday
or whatever. Yeah. Oh, I liked Thursday a lot too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like them. I feel like I got a bad impression of like what screamo bands were. I know that like Norma Jean, like the original Norma Jean, with Josh as the singer, it was kind of considered screamo, but I never really thought them to be. I don't know. Now it's almost sort of like I can't even really think of a band from that era that I would still listen to. Oh, Blood Brothers.
Oh yeah,
it was awesome. Mm-hmm. And they were that was very screamo. I just had a dream about Blood Brothers last night.
Really? What was
it
about? What was the dream?
I had a dream. I was watching the Blood Brothers play last night.
That's
okay.
Hilarious.
So yeah, there it is. We've manifested it. That's about it. Thursday and Blood Brothers, I think. Maybe.
I saw you guys tour with It Dies Today.
Oh yeah.
Scarlet and
Black Dahlia Murder.
Black Dahlia Murder. I saw I don't remember where that show was, but I vividly remember going to that show because
it was an interesting tour. Because It Dies Today was was like fresh off a tour with 18 Visions. So they were all dressing like 18 Visions, but like we knew them because they're from Buffalo. And
yeah,
Fashion Corps wasn't from Buffalo. It never really made a splash. And Black Dahlia Murder is still like just a gnarly thrash band.
They're still going.
They're still going. So it was a strange time. I don't think anybody really knew where they fit in, but it was also the time where it's like just fucking everyone just wanted to play shows, you know? So it didn't even matter. And everyone wanted to see shows too. So it didn't even matter who the fuck was on the bill. Like you go and you're going to have fun. It's fucking $5 a ticket. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
it was a simpler time.
That was me and my friends would take the train downtown and like go to like really gnarly ones too. I mean, when Converge would come to town, like everybody would go, like everybody. Yeah. And barely make it home because we were children in like a serious mosh pit.
Yeah, that's one of the bands I was going to say that I think when I found Converge, I thought they were a screamo band, but you know, obviously as the years have gone on, I've realized just how incredible they are, and they're not screamo.
No, of course, yeah. Well, I mean, at that era, everybody called everything screamo.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
yeah,
purists listening to us right now that are like getting so mad, like you know. Being like, that's not screamo, I'm sure. But everything, that was like the all-encompassing term, I feel like, back then.
I can't really think of a lot of... I feel like every screamo band was on Ferret Records, which was the label that we were on at the time. So I think that's probably why we got lumped in. But if you look at... Just look at the Ferret Records roster from like fucking 2002. And that's going to be a bevy of...
I think I had a Ferret Records shirt.
Yeah,
with the gun.
They're awesome. He's still like Carl, that ran Ferret is still a very good friend of mine, and he is now like our kind of like secondary manager too. So he's still in it, and he's fucking great. But
I'm looking at the lineup right now too.
What's up?
I'm going through the lineup right now. Oh yeah, there's like, I mean, there are so many bands on this.
Yeah, yeah. I need to see this.
Poison the Well still holds up, in my opinion.
Still amazing.
Still, yeah. The Bronx, some of their albums still hold up to me. Were you friends with them?
Yeah. They're amazing. Their guitar player, Joby, has done like our last two layouts for our records.
Yeah.
Nora.
I mean,
Remembering Never. Oh my gosh, these fucking bands. I mean, From Autumn to Ashes and a Static Lullaby might have been, as far as I was concerned, like the top of the screamo pile. But
yeah,
it's interesting too because there's supposed to be the Furnace Fest this summer that obviously has gotten postponed. But it was just sort of like a showcase of reunited screamo bands, like. From Autumn to Ashes was going to be on it. And a lot of these bands that people haven't heard of in years. And I just wonder, like, do people want to go back to that time? Like, do people want to revisit those years of Fashion Corps? And I don't know.
I think it'll be, it's like a hit or miss situation. I'm down to bring some of these bands back. Some maybe need to go, stay there, be locked away.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we both know a couple specific ones need to be locked.
I mean, they should
literally
been,
locked
they should
away.
They should have been arrested on.
We've talked
site.
About those. You need to be literally locked away.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the only screamo I'm familiar with is the comedy rants of Lewis Black.
he was on Ferret Records for a while, I think.
Oh.
He loved to scream. I could have also made that joke with Sam Kinison. I was thinking like, oh, which way do I go with this?
Paul McCartney was honestly a big screamo artist, I think, too. Like back in, when the Beatles were first on, he was screaming.
The first screamo
man was
band?
Screaming.
He was screaming.
Yeah, he introduced it. I think he was the first screamo superstar.
Yeah,
he's the first screamo billionaire.
So, Brandon, how do you know Keith? Just Twitter?
Yep.
Yeah, that's how we know each other via Twitter.
You don't have to. You sound like you're ashamed of that. You don't have to be ashamed of that. I have
no.
I have so many real life friends now that I met on Twitter. More than I like. I have more long term friends from Twitter than I have from in actual life in Buffalo.
Well, no, I mean totally. A lot of good friends. A lot of good friends. A lot of friends and lovers.
Well, Keith, did you have like, weren't you like pursuing a writing career, like before the band? I know you've written books now, but like, was that the original plan? Didn't you go to school?
Yeah,
for
that was the original plan. Then the band came up. That happened, and then I don't know if this is relevant to the conversation, but like just recently, like I've started like trying to do screenplays and you know, write for TV and the internet. And I was really on track with like actually fucking getting something very good together. And then the pandemic hit and then it all fell apart. So, but we had like meetings and I was flying out to California to meet with I don't want to really say specifics here because I don't know if it's common knowledge, but like a comedy idol of mine had started his own production company, and the first project that he wanted to do was a project that I had written with a friend of mine, and that was all going great, and it was music related, and it was about, you know, about a band on tour. And then the pandemic hit and he's like, nobody even knows what touring is anymore, like there's no way that this is the right time. So it was pretty, yeah, it sucked, it really sucked. But yeah, that's something I'd like to pursue very much. Hopefully this will end soon and go back.
You're kind of like separately big on Twitter. I feel like you have, I mean,
you know, I do what I can.
Like independent from the band, you know, you're posting. Yeah, you and Brandon like really do know each other just from Twitter. Like I think Brandon, yeah. Like, you knew him as a poster.
My ex was like a big Every Time I Die fan.
Is that why she's
remember? What's that?
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I was like, it's too loud. No, but yeah, I remember when we started, I think we were talking on Twitter and she was like, what? Whoa. Awesome, you know.
That's cool. That's weird. Yeah. That's weird to me. I have no problem like meeting men online. Like it's totally cool. Yeah. And, like going through and then being, but
I'm really good at meeting men online.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing about it is too, that I'm very lucky is that I can when I was touring, I could actually meet the people that I only knew from Twitter, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And honestly, 100% of the cases, it has been awesome. There's never been a time where I was like, oh, this guy's way better online than he is in person. You know, it's always been fucking yeah.
So I've met a few of those.
I loved meeting at Dog Boner at Nashville Zanies.
At Dog Boner was the first man I met in real life from online. He was the first.
Really?
He was my first Twitter
Michael
date.
Michael Hale, baby.
Yeah, he was my first Twitter date.
That's funny.
And it was at a Warped Tour in like 2016, I think.
By the way, I do think it's funny that you're like, you're like overcompensating being like, yeah, you know, I'm not one of those MySpace ephebophilia freaks. In fact, I do the opposite. Yeah. I just use the internet to groom adult men to hang out with me.
Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah. I pick up adult men. I prey on adult men online. Yeah.
I just go, I use it only to meet
friends.
I heard
you were grooming Dog Boner. Yeah.
Grooming adult men to hang out with you?
Yeah.
Grooming a 35-year-old man to become your friend?
How do you, so it's like, hey, so what kind of grill do you use?
Allegations have surfaced that Keith Buckley has been buying 30-something men lunch.
I think I did buy him lunch, actually.
Yeah, what would that process be? Like, what would be the process of grooming an adult
man? That would be a great premise
man?
For a horror movie, too, though. Like, just like a guy online that preys on other adult men by seeming like really agreeable and fun.
Yeah, just trying to chill. Kick
it. Yeah, that's all he wants to do is chill.
Yeah, talk cars. Come through. Oh, I got a problem with my Trans Am. Maybe you could come through and, you know.
I mean, if you want to talk the horror angle... Uh-huh. Maybe he's like, oh man, like I love grilling, you know? And then he's fucking grilling.
He's grilling his victims.
Body parts.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. And then he's like feeding the other friends from Twitter those body parts
exactly.
that he meets in the next town.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So
he actually does bring the community together, but it's through cooked and flavored human meat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Brandon, you were making fun of my tweet talking about this, but last night I was thinking about, surely I feel like there's going to be a true crime podcaster at one point that like starts doing crimes just so that he could like do a podcast about them, you know?
Oh yeah.
That's a plot for a movie I want to do.
I I wasn't making fun of the premise.
Oh,
the premise
I had typo.
Was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you said something about like, oh, when the, you meant to say when the bubble bursts, and you said when the podcasting bubble bursts.
I know, I left that mess.
This man wrote bubble bursts.
It's true.
I think you saw it. You, like, I changed your contact in my phone.
I saw it.
To bubble bursts.
I saw it. I have so many typos all the time. And I don't recognize
them. This man said bubble burts.
So I left it up, and I got fried from you. I'm like, I woke up. I saw it at 1 p.m. like way too late. The damage was done. Like, there's
It's putting a typo and like being put on blast for having a typo in a tweet is almost for us the level of like having a nude leaked in like the late 2000s. Like, yes. It's so fucking humiliating, and you will never live it down ever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have nude leaks. Every week, pretty much, if that's the case, because I have a lot of typos. I'm deleting tweets constantly. But I mean, we're
bubble birds to me. That is showing cock and balls on the computer.
Yeah, for sure.
Typing bubble birds.
Yeah,
this man said bubble birds.
I'm sorry, yeah. That's not why I brought it up. I didn't bring this
like
up.
Wildfire,
I wanted to talk about true crime, bubble Brandon. Birds. Here I am getting flamed again for my typo.
Oh yeah, you can talk about
no, true crime.
True crime,
the bubble birds is pretty funny. I'll give you that.
bubble birds.
No, I typed it on purpose because I knew it would be funny. So actually,
I typed it on purpose.
You're the idiot. Honestly, I'm.
Oh damn.
I'm doing a new type of comedy.
I got.
It's funny though too that like now. You can actually get away with typos because it, in my head, when I read a typo, I'm like, is that like a Mike Hudson tweet? Like, is he like intentionally doing that to like be silly?
Yeah.
So you can sort of claim that like it's plausible deniability of like, no, I obviously meant to do the typo. That's why it's funny.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
but not bubble words. That was an honest mistake.
I have been thinking about the true crime pods a lot lately, but there's so many freaks that listen to these like true crime podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
yeah.
I don't know if you've ever listened to them. Well, like the number one Patreon now is like some new true crime podcast Brandon just informed me of. Like the number one, True Crime Obsessed or something like that.
Yeah.
I've never listened to it.
Really?
But it's so weird.
I haven't heard it.
It's like a weird way to make money. And
yeah, it's got to get pretty dark. I mean, I tried listening to a few like Sword and Scale ones.
That guy's a freak.
Which are really, really bad. Like, I mean, bad in the sense of like, it's usually just like a lot of kids being murdered and stuff. It's just shit I don't want to hear about, you know?
It's just like not
old
cases.
Still had...
They're like new.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Some of them are from like a year ago. Like the victims are like trying to get over it, and
right.
You have a podcaster being like, here's their 911 call uncut for 35 minutes. This is the whole podcast. Like,
it's too
Do you still have that? Do you still have that audio clip of like, it was Sword and Scale where he's talking about like a very brutal child murder, and then immediately is like, Chrissy Teigen loves recipes.
Yeah.
She's got a new cookbook with all of her recipes.
I definitely have it somewhere. But yeah, that's the other thing is that they have like no ability to pivot. But
yeah.
But like really, there's like so many of these fucking podcasts. And like how many good crimes are there?
I mean,
gonna
at some
run
point,
out.
You're going to run out of good crimes.
I would say zero.
Yeah, no good
personally,
crimes. There you go, Brandon.
I would say fucking zero crimes. I don't think any guy like I hate them. I hate crimes.
Yeah,
just some crimes are better than others, though.
Well,
like the new Unsolved Mysteries. I don't even know why they're calling it Unsolved Mysteries. There's no fucking host. You need Robert Stack.
Yeah,
or you at least need a host. It's just, now it just looks like any other Dateline episode, which at least has a host.
I do like the new Unsolved Mysteries, though. I used to watch that as a kid.
I loved it as a kid. Yeah,
it slaps. The new one's pretty good. The only flaw of it is I get real sucked in and I want to know more. And the flaw in the format is that I know that they're all unsolved. I'm not going to get an answer.
They tell you the end as before
immediately.
You even start. You know, you're not going to be satisfied. You're never going to have a fulfilling ending. It sucks. I don't want to feel that way.
But the UFO one they did is good. I'm a UFO.
I got to watch it. I just watched the first episode today about that. The dude that like vanished and they found a hole in the top of the garage or something. Like His Ooh, car was parked.
I haven't watched the first one. I've been going out of order. Brandon, did you watch Unsolved Mysteries back in the day?
No, I think my mom did. My mom was always into that.
Oh, it's a perfect mother-son bonding type show.
Yeah, yeah.
100%.
I feel like maybe they should have solved some of the mysteries from the last show before they started this.
See,
one.
I like where your head's at, because why wouldn't they come back
with Solved Mysteries, where they do a show about the old Unsolved Mysteries and how they finally... Because now we're just adding more loose ends.
See, this is... You're talking about wanting to get into Hollywood. That's an idea right there.
Can I live with you? That's cool if I live with you?
Yeah, you want to come out? It's a $1 billion idea. once this shuts down, we're walking into CAA with that. And
let's do a Solved Mysteries podcast where we actually just talk about unsolved mysteries that have been solved.
Yeah, we're solving ourselves. Yes. It'll be easy, bro. Let's just solve all these crimes, dude.
Dude, what? How hard could it be to solve a mystery?
Yeah. I mean, I legitimately want to.
I do too. I think there's a lot of, but we could do like the most mundane mysteries, like, you know, a car has been stolen.
Small claims court.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We ordered tacos a few weeks ago, and one of the tacos came and it was just full of black beans, nothing else. And there's no chance that we had ever ordered. There's no chance that any other human being had ever ordered this. It was a ton of black beans in a burrito shell, and thus arose a mystery. Like, who the fuck made this? And did they really think that this any human being would eat something like this? So we could go solve stuff like that if you want.
Oh, you didn't solve it though.
This man eating beans.
Still unsolved.
Oh, still wow. I realized I had a good mystery that I think I solved. apples started appearing in my yard, in the same position. With like one bite taken out of it only. And they would appear in the same spot like a lot. And I don't know if I've quite solved it, but I at least found the apple tree that they come from. Like, it's like across the street, up a hill a little bit. And I think birds are like fucking with the apples. It was a huge mystery for a while. We're like, dude, who's throwing apples in our yards?
Do they have like teeth marks in it?
Yeah, but like they're rotten enough where you can't tell. That's the other thing. Yeah. They're kind of like rotted. Uh-huh. So it's like, wait, this has been here for a while, but it's just like...
I think this is exactly the type of mystery we need to solve.
I know.
Like, this is exactly it.
Because it's really innocent, but at the same time, if you're thinking about a human doing it, it's like, wait, why is one person throwing one apple into our yard like for a whole year?
Yeah.
What? It seems in the same spot. It seems intentional. Like, that's even... That's creepy. That's really creepy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Who did that?
Well, I think I figured it out.
What the hell?
I think it's birds.
Some guy is just throwing apple in your backyard. Some guy is eating one bite out of an apple and throwing it into your backyard.
Front yard.
I didn't do that.
Oh. You're just chewing an apple at my house while I sleep. I just miss being over here.
Listen, I'll solve that mystery for you right goddamn now.
Yeah, you start chewing.
You see Brandon like take a bite out of an apple and chucking it off screen like 20 times during the recording.
Oh boy. Well, I think that's as good of a time as ever to end this one.
Perfect. Keith. And I mean, really think about this, because I think it would be fun to do moving forward.
All right. Well, dude, thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thanks for
love
sharing
you guys.
Stories.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, any plug? Any plug for Road?
Nope. we have a new record recorded that we can't put out yet because we can't tour. So every time I die, .net or something. I don't even know. But whatever.
Yeah, I'm gonna go try to find that video of you guys chilling in the backyard.
I think
it's
called At Home with Every Time I Die.
Okay, I'm gonna see if it still holds
also,
up.
Also, if you haven't seen it, the Shit Happens miniseries that we did like on the internet I just went back and rewatched it. It's pretty good. So
okay,
I would recommend that. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again,
all right, guys.
Keith Buckley. Thanks for coming on.